So Penny just got through barking, and I was telling Christy
Okay.
I had a big dog, small dog thing, because I dropped Zero off at daycare, and there were these little like poodle-esque, like I guess miniature, I don't know, whatever. There was two of them in the car beside me,
No.
and like they just started like, I mean, you people talk about yapping, but there's nothing else to describe it. They were yapping.
Yeah.
And Zero, in all of Zero-ness, which sit down with me and I'll tell you all of the things that make me crazy. He just sat there and stared at these two dogs, like, why are you insane? And I was like, you know what? He's not yappy. He's not that. So there's that.
I mean,
He's barky. He'll bark at you like he's gonna murder you, but like it just was the yap. There was nothing there. They weren't yap. They just general enthusiasm.
there's just like I understand dogs are gonna bark at things that are like within a mile of their house if they're aware of it. But like when you're living in a townhouse and your neighbor opens their door and your
I
dog loses her mind, it's like that she just opened the door. She's allowed to
No.
open her door. And you know
No.
her and you like her. And you're gonna
No.
go over and say hi and be like, hey, friend. But no, we're gonna act like we're being attacked by aliens.
Was it you who posted the thing that was like a it was like postal worker comes to door to murder me. Me. Being murdered. Your dog. I tried to tell you.
I tried to tell you. I told you he was evil. You wouldn't listen to me.
That's basically Zero. Zero is like he barks at anyone that comes to the door because that's his job. He says
Yes,
that's what he
same.
does. He,
And like,
and but
it's
like
understandable.
the hilarity of me being like, no, that's our friend Sheeran versus, you know, that could be a killer. Who knows? Like, I don't know. Like, he
You
doesn't
don't
know
know.
that. He's like, I don't have face recognition. I can't, like, he's like, bare minimum smells of you and dad, and that's it. That's all I got.
Like,
So.
I mean, and I've talked to people about this before, but like, I appreciate that she barks because it's a good, like, safety aspect. And my other neighbors are always really glad. They're like, makes us feel safer that she's so barky because no one's coming within a, good radius of this house without Penny losing every ounce of calm that she's ever had. But like, and so I don't mind so much that like the general barking. It's just that,
Any sort of movement that that woman makes is.
yeah, it's just because I mean it's very loud when she opens the door. And
Yeah.
so even though she can't, like Penny can't see it or anything, it's just the loudness. And then she just like flips out. And I'm like, can we just get used to the loudness though?
Right. Or when you came to visit and Zero just like barked at you all the time, and I
Yeah.
was like, no, but Christy's one of the ni well, one of the nice ones, and he's like, listen, bitch, like I don't know who's
Listen, I don't know that.
the
No,
nice
you're
one or
fine. You're fine. No.
I wish, because we've never had a true, thank God, like breaking and entering where I would freak the hell out, so he doesn't
Right.
know like the noises that would really be
I
associated with panic.
Hey, no.
Like, I feel like if I could show him that, like, do a simulation,
Right? If we could like in we if we could somehow
show true panic.
show true panic where I'd be like, please bark now,
Yeah.
versus like again, Mella has opened her door.
Except, and I love my dog, but he is half pit bull and like half shepherd, and like the half pit bull part, if I really started making those noises, I think he'd be like, oh, nope, see, that's I didn't sign up for that now. Like,
I don't actually want to fight, Mom.
right, I don't actually want to fight these people. Like, I
Yeah.
am here to alert you that things are happening, but your voice being at that pitch is making me uncomfortable. So,
I
yeah.
do wish that people could see right now that I have Penny enclosed into a blanket.
She does.
She is trying really hard to escape. I just have her like swaddled.
It looks like a swaddle. She looks like Mary.
She is swaddled in this blanket.
In a whatever, except that Penny is the baby Jesus.
We're trying to make everything as like less sensory aspects.
I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast before that you cover her like a parrot.
I do.
And
I
then we tried it for Zero one time and he became a velociraptor and was just like,
my last dog. No,
that's a little dog, big
no,
dog. Man.
No, oh, it's a Penny thing. Because, like, no. You're fine. My last dog, Lizzie, hated being under the blanket, hated it. And like would have become a velociraptor also. And then when I was living in Scotland with Joe, she had this Staffy mix, Max. She still has him. He's still the best. Max.
No, I love him.
You met him. Yeah. He also loved to be under the blanket. And you could also just kind of like if he was like getting riled up, you just put the blanket on him and he'd be like, oh, okay, nap time. So,
well, and also I think it's like, okay, my watch has ended. Like, I don't have to.
Like, whereas, oh, okay.
Yeah, where Zero's like, watch never ends unless watch things are really scary or a broom comes out, which is the watch is over. So
the brooms.
Hey guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks, where it's Christy and I haven't talked in a while, actually.
Oh, pan.
Oh no, she froze, which was a really opportune time to freeze. You froze right as I said we haven't talked in a while.
And I'm just like.
And then you just went silent, and I was like, and apparently we're still not.
Nope. This whole podcast is just going to be, like, randomly me being like, no.
Yeah, please, everyone knows that she's not yelling. Well, she might be yelling at me, but generally not. She's yelling at the dog.
It's not. It's just Penny. We haven't talked in a while. It's been...
like a couple days. It's very upsetting. I just feel like everything has happened. In the
How dare we
had quite a few events on that required.
Yes, you've been very busy. I want to hear about your big fancy event that you had.
Yeah, so we did
hey, welcome to Theology on the Rocks.
Where we're drinking today, we decided we're emerging, even though it is terrible outside right now in North Carolina. We're emerging from the shell that is January and the election, and we are trying to. I used the phrase "brat girl summer,"
yes,
to Christy, which I know she did not make fun of me at all in her head. And I said, "Get your best brat girl drink," and mine. I moved on. Taylor will be sad to know I moved on from Truly Unruly to White Claw Surge.
Oh, are they good?
I mean, they're still White Claw.
They're still White Claw.
I mean, I don't think White Claw is going to sponsor our podcast. Or anything.
I mean.
Yeah, they're good. They're the kind of higher octane seltzers, but.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, way less fun name, but you told me that, and I had already poured a bunch of wine, so it's not necessarily my summer drink, but it is my, you know, like let's have a good time drink because
wine. I mean, you can never go wrong.
Wine is what we're doing again.
So the fancy dinner was, gosh, I'm so popular. I keep getting text messages. Why? They're mostly from Rover. And from like Skip Town,
okay so
our big big dinner was for the human rights I don't know if it's human rights council, and that little sticker that you had on all your stuff when you were in high school, that's an equal sign, like a blue with the yellow equal sign. Everyone kind of knew it. And you were like, this is cool, but I don't really know what it is. Well, now I know what it is. It's really important. So we have a friend who's on their like board. And so I donated some pictures, black and white photography. And here's a shout out to the Instagram. If you guys want to see my photography, which is what I do when I want to not think, It's at Leah Robinson Photos on Instagram. Anyway, so I donated some. Thank you. I like doing them. I think people just think I have no. I'm just a heartless, unhobby person. I do like read on the beach as well, but that's a very specific activity that I'm not Christy. I can't do it all the time. But anyway, so HRC really is kind of in the background fighting the good fight on a lot of political stuff. Like, basically, if you are left-leaning and you posted something on Instagram, the HRC has probably tried to take it on at some stage and or currently taking it on. And that's not to give them props beyond due, but it does seem like they're doing a lot. So for North Carolina, the big thing right now, and there was a lot of reps there from North Carolina specifically. It's there's a real, I was talking to Christy about this, there's a real tug of war with Republicans and Democrats about just the state. The Republicans historically have had North Carolina, and the cities here mean that it's changing and they really don't want to let go of it.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's a lot of corruption and rewriting of rules that we didn't know were not able to be rewritten. So we managed in this election to, we talked about this, elect down ticket, a pretty predominant Democratic group.
Yeah.
Governor and attorney general and all of that. But they're now trying and have successfully push through legislation because they had a supermajority before this new cycle, basically limiting the powers of these people so they can't, like, they just put through something that says that our Attorney General Jeff Jackson, who's very, very liberal and very good, that he can't challenge in court the president or try to sue the president for anything that he does in North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. And then there's this woman, Allison Riggs, who's was elected fairly, and they're trying to throw out votes for it and whatever. So the HRC just basically like is trying to keep these people in check. And alongside a lot of the bills that, you know, that pass or don't pass, and a lot of stuff related to the LGBT community and, you know, trans youth and things like that. So this whole event was to raise money, but to also, like, you know, in a way it felt a little bit like a apology tour for some of the Democrats in North Carolina.
Okay.
you had a lot of people coming up that were leaders within the Democratic Party in North Carolina saying, like, we're sorry. We failed you. And they didn't even say, like, make excuses. They were like, we failed you. We're going to try harder. Like, this is what we're doing. And then you had, you know, there was just so many stories, so much good stuff that just kind of, it gave you a pump up tour. It was like the antithesis of the inauguration.
That's great. I like that. Yeah.
You had drag queens everywhere. I auctioned off my pictures and I made the HRC a lot of money. I mean, well, a lot of money for 4 pictures that I printed, you know, like, and I think
that's
the whole
so great. Event,
was great. Yeah. That's not to go on and on about that, but I did want to highlight them because I think it's something that I didn't really know what they did. So if you have an HRC chapter in your state, I would encourage you to see what they're doing. And it made me want to actively be a part of what they're doing.
I think that's so great. And I think that one of the things that you and I talked about, not like on the last, a little, we touched on a little bit in the last episode, but like have talked about since is, finding ways that we can like feel like we're helping and doing things and whatnot. And that's a really good one. It's a good way like to find in your local areas and like get involved in stuff that's going on in your communities. Because there's already a lot of stuff going on and like we should find and join up with those and lend our support.
Yeah. And it can feel hopeless and overwhelming. And we talked about this right after the election, how we felt, which was like that. And I think attending that dinner, and they were trying to raise money, so I'm not completely like blind to the motives, but of tugging on the heartstrings, but like,
well, I mean, you know, but money is necessary. It's not a bad thing. Yeah.
They're trying to sue the government over the birthright stuff. Like North Carolina is giving that, they're giving money to that, and they can't, you know, they have to, you have to have money to do this stuff,
to do anything. So yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. Yeah. So that was, we did that, and then, you know, other things, but that was the big one. And, we were fancy for a night.
I love that. It's so fun too. I think, to be able to have those moments of like, we're going to get, it's like a good thing and you're doing like work with a good organization and stuff. But like, also it's just like, we get to have a fancy night. Like this is,
we do.
And fun. It, yeah.
It's so fun. And I think, you know, one of the most, someone asked me once, what is the saddest thing that you've ever heard? And like, of course there's like war and genocide and like, terrible things. Obviously, I'm not,
yeah.
Yeah. But one of the saddest things I heard that like sort of resonated with me in my place as a middle-class white woman in the United States is I remember when, what's his name? Jack Sparrow.
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp was doing his, you can tell I prep for my, Johnny Depp was doing like his trial or whatever, but he talked about how much he spent on wine. I bring this up quite a lot. He spent like $30,000 on wine a month or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, he talked about just being in search of like this perfect wine and, you know, wine doesn't do what it used. And I just remember thinking how sad that was. Like, I want to be comfortable and like be able to like do what I want to do, but, and so does everyone else. But like the idea that things wouldn't feel special anymore.
I know. I saw this somewhere once too, and it was in reference to a celebrity's wedding. And I honestly can't remember who it was, so we're not going to like try to pinpoint it, but
you're not just going to name characters.
I'm not going to just start naming. Like maybe it was this one. No, I have no idea. But they were talking about how like celebrity weddings tend to be, or like not tend to be. Sometimes celebrities will have like more low-key weddings and they don't tend to wear in these low-key ones. They don't tend to wear like big fancy wedding dresses. And they, interview I was reading was because they said we do this all the time for our job. And so like putting on a fancy dress isn't fun anymore. And it's not special in that way. And so like, and I remember having the same kind of sadness of like,
yeah,
your life sucks.
Right? Like the day I put on that, no one will ever see me in a dress like that ever again, but it was magical because I don't wear that. I looked like I'd stepped out of a Disney film. Like I don't wear
you.
That's your day, day to be. Yeah.
That's your day to feel like your best or at least like top, you know, top 10 or something.
And you get to be OTT. Like you, that's your day to be big hair, big dress, big or not, you know, do what you want.
Do what you want to do. But like, that's the day where you get to do that. And like, to think about all of the ways that things that I think generally we, as people think like this is special or that is special, but they're just, it's been killed for the ultra rich. And I think I also read something somewhere. And again, this was so long ago, but it was like, there's a limit to how much money you can have and still maintain happiness. Cause if you go over that, you start into this, it like starts to mess with your brain. And like, instead of being like satisfied and happy, you're just like, how do I make more? How do I make more? And I think we can see this with some of like the ultra rich, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's so like
the, obviously it's a comfortable place
mentality. Like, if you need more and more to.
Yeah. Like there's a place where you have enough money where you're like comfortable and you're not necessarily like budgeting or whatever. You could do what you want to do. But if you go too far beyond that, it's like you lose. Anyway, it was a whole thing about like, where's the sweet spot in terms of how much money you should have. And I remember it wasn't as much as you thought. Like, it wasn't like you should be making like 500K a year or something. It was like 150, like, fairly reasonable. And I was like, that seems like, you know, maybe we should have a, like, I have seen a lot of conversations lately about like, we have a minimum wage, we should also have a maximum wage. And I was like, that feels like maybe we need to do that.
If I didn't have such wayward feelings and Stuart wasn't what he was, I would agree, but I have to.
But you're not.
He can't have a max rich.
Like, Stuart's anywhere. No. I mean, Stuart's making a good amount of money, but like, Stuart's not anywhere near what I would say is like starting to become problematic. So,
we get really excited when he puts on a kilt. There's like some sort of like serotonin hit to my brain where I'm like, we're about to do something fun.
It's that situation too of like when they're talking about taxing the rich, they're not talking about taxing anyone making under like $100 million a year. Right. Like it's so much higher than you think.
Like the rich are so rich. I think people don't realize that
the ultra rich are so far beyond us. And that's what I'm saying. Like there should be some.
No, I do agree with that. But again, I think that's because you and I will never hit that cap.
Never. I can only imagine what kind of weird life shift I would have to take to make.
Oh my gosh. Same, but also like imagine how we'd be if we got really rich. We'd just be like
insufferable is what we would be.
We already are ish, but like we'd be even worse. Like
we would be so terrible.
Like instead of just being snobs about theology, we'd be snobs about everything.
Everything. Good Lord. Can you imagine? We would be the most obnoxious.
No, we'd have to, and we'd secretly dislike each other very much. Like,
oh yeah.
Now we just fight about football, but then we could fight about real stuff.
We'd also, I feel like we would become those like those really eccentric rich people who have like we'd have a vendetta against each other, and so we'd like do all sorts of weird, crazy things to each other, like
White Lotus, just like
it'd become like almost comical, and then we would, and then at the end of this movie that we're crafting, at the end of this movie we're crafting, we'd be like, actually, we still really like each other, and this has just been a really funny game, but like
we would, and then we'd like maybe kill each other. I don't
know. Probably,
just for banter, but like. Yeah, I mean, I don't, so it was a weird, because it's a weird world going into that. Like, I put my photos up at, like, 100, which felt insane to me. There were 4 of them. And then it kept going up and up and up. And I remember when it hit 200, I was like, who has $200 to spend on, like, I mean, they're beautiful photos.
They're beautiful.
They're great, but they're going to go on your wall. Like, they're not going to feed a family of 4, like, you know, and...
Oh.
Who has, but I mean, people have that money, and like, yeah. I'm very proud of what I did, but like, so don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it felt like a lot of money to spend on that, but people,
I think too, especially if it's like one of your first time, like, cause you've not sold a lot of, it's been kind of a hobby more. Mm-hmm. And so I think that initial stage of like, oh, this is a valuable thing.
People like it.
Selling, people like this.
Also, but I think because we make books and people don't pay $250.
Nobody's paying $250 for our books.
Travesty. You get my new one, you get close, but and I don't get the money for it. So in our brat girl summer, which is very dreary right now,
it is actually summer in Florida. You can just everybody come down here. It's hot. It's sunny.
It's not here. It's rainy. It's rainy and Zero's upset. And I caught a cat in a cat trap today, and because we have all these cats that I'm trying to like TNR. All you cat people know what I'm talking about. Basically, get them. Spayed and neutered.
Yeah.
And because they're just like hanging around. I'm not trying to take them in. I'm just trying to get them so they don't make babies. And I kid you not, and guys, don't judge me here, but it was so disgusting. And this cat was so insane. Like, it was like, ah! And I was like, I just let it out. Just let it out. Because it was like pouring rain. The TNR place
is like, I can't.
It doesn't open until Monday, and honestly, there's like 3 cats. I was like, I'll see you again, sir.
That's fantastic.
I'll catch you next time. That's which fantastic. I know is not responsible, but you know what? It was so cold. It was like below freezing and just pouring rain, and I was like, yeah. And the cat's just sitting there like backed up. looking at me like, imagine the worst cat you've ever interacted that's been on the inside of the house. Mm-hmm. And then imagine that you caught one that you don't know in a metal cage.
Oh, I know.
In the outside realm.
Yeah. I mean, I do actually have some experience with catching cats and traps. He was
spitting.
And it is always terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. And Stuart wasn't here. And I just was like, and so he goes, well, wait till I get back, which was like 7 p.m. And I was like, it's raining. Like, I can't. So I just was like, we're just going to cut our losses with this guy. Keep your ball slash ovaries for another day. Ma'am.
That's amazing. We didn't do it. Well, okay.
And when I opened it, it flew.
Yes. Yep.
Anyway, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, we'll pretend like it's summer for both of us because it is summer in Florida.
Yeah. Please.
And our brat girl summer is, we're going to be happy. This is a welcome to the happy things, guys.
Yeah. We're talking about
a celebration.
We're celebrating. And then we have the Grammy. We're going to talk about the Grammys. We're going to talk about the halftime show. We're going to talk about David Lynch, which for me is happy because I'm over my lament and I'm now in the celebration.
Okay. You're in the celebration stage. That's good.
So where should we start?
I want to start with David Lynch because I think that it will be both entertaining and informative for me because, as I told you, I have not actually seen any David Lynch films. I don't know how I've missed out on all of them, but
you didn't need a film major in college.
That might be it. Yeah.
she says without any sense of irony.
I know you and a whole amount, like it was a widespread amount of people that I know were really sad about his passing. And then we're sharing a lot of things, but I don't have really anything, concrete.
Siri was knowledge wise. My sister in this, she was posting a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So tell us some.
Yeah. David Lynch things. There's going to be a lot of shout outs to Atlanta because I started watching David Lynch stuff when I was in Atlanta. And it was somewhat to do with there's this whole sort of like, now I call it like, if you've ever been with a film major, you are one. It's like a soup of directors. And David Lynch is in them. Werner Herzog, Miyazaki. Like, there's just a group of folks that, like, do films that are very impressive.
Yeah.
And deeply disturbing as well, I should say. Harmony Korine, like, if you really want to get... He did Spring Breakers, which everyone is like, yay! You just leave it at that. If you are a sad person, leave it at that.
I've seen that movie.
I've never seen it. Is it good? I don't know.
It is. I don't know how to answer that. The one with James Franco, right?
Yeah. And Selena Gomez and Ashley Benson.
Ashley Benson. And I don't even know. Was it good? Yes. I've seen it twice because sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, I have to watch this again to have an opinion because I've been in a state, you know? And I watched it the second time and I was like, turns out that state is just the state you're going to be in.
It's
an interesting movie. Anyway. Yeah.
I would say Darren Aronofsky as well. Like, there's certain directors where you watch their stuff. Like, I will never watch Pi or the one where Jennifer Connelly is doing all the drugs with Jared Leto. But anyway, there's some directors who make films that you just don't watch again because they are so upsetting. And I would put Harmony Korine and I would put Darren Aronofsky to some degree in that. Then there's directors who make movies who you have to watch again. And I think David Lynch did that. And so I started watching his stuff. Yeah, from this film major, but he had this whole soup of directors and like I would watch some of the stuff, and David Lynch really latched on it latched on to me in a way, and I wanted to just consume everything that he had ever done.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was just something, it was just enough horror, enough weirdness, and enough you're by the water cooler at the end of the day with Lost stuff, style yeah. stuff. And so, you know, I started watching Twin Peaks, which is the greatest TV show of all time, in my opinion. And there would be no Lost without Twin Peaks. There would be no Riverdale. There would be no any of those. But anyway, so I started watching that. And we had a video store, which still exists in Atlanta, called Videodrome. And it was one of those, like, weird... They try to recreate it in Riverdale, if any of y'all have ever seen that. And it's funny because it's called Blue Velvet, is the which is a David Lynch film. And that's what the video store is called in yes. Riverdale, and it's yeah. just like that. So yeah. I watched the whole of Twin Peaks on VHS
okay. yeah,
in the early 2000s, because that's all there... Because no one... Like, people watched it when it came on to the TV in the 80s,
yep.
but then people forgot about it, and then they didn't watch it anymore. And it's just, it's television, but it was a simple concept, but it was just one that no one had done. You know, like, I think I've talked about it, is you do a town, you do an underlying mystery, and then you make a mm-hmm. bunch of really interesting characters, and
yeah,
they sort of work towards that mystery. But really, it's all about how they're interacting and doing, you know, it's Lost. I mean, essentially. Right.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that's so many shows. And we seem to think that there needs to be something else to catch you. But if the characters are good, mm-hmm. there doesn't have to be something else. You know, like, it can just be a normal town and interesting characters. And
yeah, I mean, Twin Peaks is in the upper, is yeah. in, like, Washington State or something. Like, it's very placed, like, it's, you know, it's yeah. it isn't an island, it isn't, it's there. You can, they have a Twin Peaks festival every year, and you can go to where it is.
That's
you can probably stop by Forks and go to Twilight Zone if you want. If you're up there, bring your rain jacket. But so I fell in love with David Lynch through that, and yeah. Also 80s commercials, because this was recorded from the TV. Someone had recorded the TV show from the TV and put it uh-huh. on. And it was a series of like 12 VHS, so you had to go back and rent and, you know,
yep,
whatever. So then I started watching the films, and I think the films are really interesting because they force you to... One, look at stuff in a way that I would argue that kind of Harmony Korine did, which is like kind of disturbing, but it isn't too much. Like, it doesn't go too far to where, because you're always questioning what it means. Like, I think
yeah,
some of these directors will show you like a severed head, and it's like, that's a severed head. That's exactly what the severed head is. That person's head came right off. But like with David Lynch, you see that, you're like, it's in a corner. Why is it in the corner? Why is it blue? What is it yes. doing? Whose yeah. head is it? Do we know where it yeah. came from? So anyway, yeah, you there. Sorry, I have another cold now, and I hate everything. So the films are great. My favorite is Mulholland Drive. I think it's great, okay. but it's one of those where you end the film, and it's why I told Christy I wanted to watch that one with her. I think that one's probably the most accessible. Okay. And at the end, you're just like, all right. Get the wine out / whatever. We're talking for, and you'll talk for like 5 hours on it.
Yeah.
And now
I love that.
Yeah. And I swear it probably doesn't matter who you are, because he deals with so many different themes. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to be into one, X, Y, and Z for it to be right. in the 5 hour conversation. Like,
I feel like this is the beauty of television specifically, but also mm-hmm. then can translate into like certain films or music or things, because there's art that you know and is already like, you're told it's valuable, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know that the Mona Lisa is valuable. You don't actually even ever really think, like, is this a piece of art I would hang in my house? Because it's already so inaccessible, you know? Right. But when you're talking about stuff like TV or, again, like some films, music, stuff like that, there's a way that it creates not just a piece of art, but also that community of like, I think we've lost this a lot with streaming. I think like it's deeply unfortunate, but like what we used to do with Lost of every week being like, what happened? Let's dissect like what we all think is going on, like stuff we noticed, whatever, reading blogs on the internet, talking about stuff or whatever.
I think that's the beauty of those kind of shows. Yeah.
I think that the thing that I love the most is when you watch something with people and you're all at the end just like, what did I just watch?
Mm-hmm.
And now we have to stop and talk. Like, we're not going to walk out of that theater and be like, okay, let's go for drinks and talk about whatever. You know, we're all going to be like, okay, we have to go get a drink and talk about this movie. You know?
Yeah.
I like that. I think that
and I think it's like
such important kind of art, you know?
100%. And I think it's funny because I hadn't thought about that until you just said it, but I do think that people oftentimes will look at directors like David Lynch and they'll be like, oh, well, he's just too artsy. He's just too highfalutin. Okay, is mm-hmm. that true, or have we just lost the ability to talk about things and analyze them? Like, are we just so – we just want these consumable things?
We want everything to be easy, and then you can forget it immediately after.
Yeah.
I saw this. So I'm in it's a subscription box of books that I get every month. Ooh. They send you, like, an option. Like, here are the 5 books you can pick from. I'm going to shout them out because I think that it's great. It's just called Book of the Month. So you like one book a month, you get a book. You can get more if you want, but you're supposed to do like one a month. They send you the options and they tell you like little blurbs and then you get your book. And this past month, the February books, one of them had a label on it called Highbrow. And it was like, just a warning, this book is highbrow. And I was like, what?
A warning.
What is happening right now? What does this mean? I've been doing this for a couple of years, probably honestly like 3 years. I've never seen this before. What is going on? I had to go research because I was like, there's nothing on the website that tells you what this means. It's just like, this is, and it says that just a warning, this book is highbrow. And I'm like, firstly, why are we warning people about this? Secondly, what do you mean?
I think that's indicative of what I
found a Reddit thread that was like talking about it. And they said that apparently there were some books that were getting bad ratings because people were saying like, this book is too highbrow. I can't understand it. And that they, when they're reading books, they want to just not think. They want to turn their brain off and just not think. And as a literature person, I instantly had a whole meltdown about the state of the world and like lost my entire mind.
I think that this is true
for so much art, like TV and movies again. And I don't think that it's necessarily wrong that sometimes we want to just watch something and like not worry about it. Like we all have our comfort shows.
Yeah.
You know, I love some really stupid movies. There's all that kind of stuff that we don't have to think too much about, but like that shouldn't be everything we consume. Like, just like, don't just eat junk food. Like,
right.
Throw some veggies in, you know?
I think that maybe if influences as well, how we are in the world right now is like everyone's, believing insane things and or easily persuaded to sit things that don't seem insane. And I'm like, we talk about it all the time, but we have, I think, lost the ability to critically think. And one of the things that got brought up recently was to bring it theological is that J.D. Vance made some comment about Thomas Aquinas, of all people. I wouldn't even talk about Thomas Aquinas.
How wrong was our dear old JD about Aquinas?
Oh, I mean, like shockingly. Okay, here's how wrong. This is like how bad / influential you have to be, is that the Pope called him out.
I did see that. The Pope was like, hey, this is like,
no.
No, but he said I don't remember what specific one.
Yeah, he talked about a concept of like an ordering concept. There's a Latin name that I can't remember, but it was in Summa Theologica. Oh, yes. And it was this idea of like how we approach our relationships with people, and that there's a divine order in how we would put people first and not. Mm-hmm. And again, if you go, please go research this. I'm not a Thomason or Thomatilian.
I'm not a Thomistic scholar. Yeah.
No, but the idea is that you wouldn't treat your, like if your mom and even me were in the middle of the road and you had to save one, it's like that classic thing. Like, who are you going to save?
Right.
Which if you save your mom, Christy, it's fine. I won't get upset. But the Thomas, Aquinas, really, right, it's fine. But he transferred it onto this understanding of how we treat immigrants and people in our, which is that we have to, it was just another way of doing America first.
Right. It's America first.
You put your other, you put people close to you first. And like,
I think.
So the Pope was like, sure, but let's go back to the Bible.
Well, like, the Bible, but also like, this is not how Aquinas meant it at all. Mm. And to like, the notion that by loving my parents and my friends, I therefore am not supposed to care about people I don't know is wild to me. Like, yeah. As if I only have so much empathy or love. Like, this shouldn't actually be a restricted thing. It should be. But like you said, I think that a lot of the state of the world has a lot to do with the fact that we don't want to engage with stuff that's making us have to think through things a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, and if we think about the basis for the Bible, I mean, if we go back to that even, like, it is Lost. It is Twin Peaks. You have this underlying mystery and a whole bunch of characters that we keep up with, and we analyze what they're doing and what they're saying. And it's like
the notion that the Bible is simple or that the Bible is clear, all of that is deeply, deeply incorrect and like offensive, actually. I get very offended when people say, well, the Bible is simple, or like the gospel is simple, or Christianity is simple.
I'm a Bible believing.
I'm a Bible believing Christian.
You should see how many times I've adjusted that on an essay. I'm a Bible believing.
Nothing. And like the number of times that somebody has said to me, like, oh, well, the Bible is clear, and then said some nonsense that the Bible is very not clear about. And it's like, just because you have a second grade reading level does not mean that I have a second grade reading level. And I am going to be insulting about that because it's stupid. It's a stupid thing to say. Yeah. Like, I don't read.
Christy is not a Sunday school teacher to preschoolers.
There is a reason that I don't teach little children.
they'd be like, ma'am, I do have a second grade reading level because I'm in second grade.
Can you imagine? I have a second grade level because that's how old I am. Once I was a kindergartner. It's amazing that I have a second grade reading level, okay?
Yeah, they're like, I can't wait till I have that.
I'm just such a jerk. No. it's like this book, or like you're saying with David Lynch, like there's stuff, or oh my God, I was talking about this with one of my colleagues yesterday. Do you remember the first time you saw Memento? And you were nonsense is happening? And then you realize at the end, and you're like, I have to watch this again because now I understand. 100%. It's like,
that's David Lynch right there.
There's stuff that you should engage with on a deeper level. And you know what? A lot of that stuff is the stuff that we watch kind of mindlessly, and we're missing so many things because we've trained ourselves into this like anti-intellectual state. And a lot of it comes from that Christian right, that like ultra evangelical, we want you to think that the Bible is clear so you can't think about anything too deeply. Because if you That's think, because like if I put a lot of effort into studying The Great Gatsby, I should put 1,000 times more effort into studying the Bible. Like,
right.
As a person who believes one should be held in more esteem, you know?
I always, like, 100%, I use literature. Great Gatsby is a good example. I always tell students that question things about the Bible. I'm like, you think you're Bible believing, and then I'll say, you know, what do you mean by that? What specifically? And they're like, well, the Bible. And it's like, no, if we were to have a literature class on The Great Gatsby, there would be, if there's 40 kids in here, there'd be 40 different opinions. Mm-hmm. And you think the Bible is any different. Now, we want this unified thought because that helps us feel better, but that's not how that works. And that's, yeah. I mean, Christy and I wouldn't have jobs if that's how that works.
We wouldn't have jobs, but like also, I mean, honestly, so much of the world would be so worse if we thought that mm-hmm. everything was just super clear cut, because no one is. People are not simple. People are complex. How much more complex must God be? I mean, it's honestly, like I said, it's very offensive to say these kinds of things. Like, the Bible is simple. It's one of my, like,
no, I think so. And the fact that we're training people to think that is just upsetting too. And but I think, like, to conclude the David Lynch thing, I think that, are you, what were you going to say?
No, well, I was just going to say, I mean, like, this is what I think is so important about not just talking about David Lynch in like, oh, I like his movies, but actually like really diving in and saying like, I'm going to, like you did, like, I'm really going to invest time into understanding his art. I think that's what helps our brains to be capable of doing it within other things and more important things, and like, you know, not just the Bible, but like philosophically about your life, you're going to be better at understanding what's going on in the world if you take the time to engage with art that you like.
And also to wrestle with the fact that it's okay if you don't understand it. Like, one of his movies, his last movie, I think actually was called Inland Empire. And I went and saw it. I'm about to hipster up, Christy. Watch out.
I love this. I'm so excited.
I went to the Brooklyn Independent Film Movie Theater.
That's the most hipster Brooklyn, thing you've ever said in your life.
I know. I mentioned it once in our girls chat, and everyone was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, this is real. I'm telling you a real place. I think they thought I just made up some like hipster dumpster site. I mean, I don't know if it exists now, but it existed in like 2007. So, but I saw Inland Empire there, and Inland Empire is sort of a series of, it doesn't matter. It's complicated. I don't understand it. I was stone cold sober. It was midday when I watched it. And I'm telling you, I couldn't tell you I couldn't even explain it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
It's okay.
But that's also okay. Like, when I saw that, I was like, okay, he went a little far on that.
Well, you know what else is even great about that is that, like, if you see something or read something that you don't understand, you can go find people and be like, hey, I didn't understand this. Can you help me? And again, it's good for us to say that we don't know how to interpret something. It's good for us to learn how to ask questions about people or about things like that. And then it's good for us to like learn, because you learn so many other things when you do that. Like, oh, I didn't know this history, or I didn't know this thing that had inspired him, or like,
People wonder why I read so much about shitty theology. It's not for my funsies. Like, it's not for my mental health. It's because you got to know what's happening and we harp on about this, but I think part of the reason we harp on about critical thinking is because we're teachers and we see so much of it lacking. And I think that's David Lynch represents to me an opening up of that world where I could think independently and had to wrestle with not understanding. And also, I think coming from a Southern Baptist tradition did influence my love for him, because you know, I'd been handed stuff that was not easy, but is in easy form. You know what I'm saying? Like, people had said it's easy. This is the answer. Like, blah.
Yeah.
And so with him, because it wasn't religious, there was no one giving me easy answers. I had to sit there and like rewatch a scene.
Yeah.
You know, and of someone staring at a, why is this box in a dumpster? I don't know. It, what does it represent? Oh God. You know, and which I should have been I should have been doing that with theology and the Bible, but instead I was given this pre-prescribed sort of thing where it wasn't hard. And so this was kind of my incarnation of that. And I was in seminary, which certainly corresponded because it was opening my brain to that stuff. And it was really great. Of course, the great Kyle MacLachlan was introduced to us all there. Well, maybe not introduced, but he certainly was his pride and joy. And like, he's just, like I said, some stuff won't make sense and that's okay. But some stuff is, I think, really interesting. And it changed the way I thought. And there's not many artists that I think that you can say it's like not just, that's right. Like, do I think Lost categorically has better elements than Twin Peaks? Of course I do. I mean, it was filmed in completely different times. But like, I couldn't have watched Lost with the same brain if I had not first watched Twin Peaks. If that makes sense.
Which is, I think, also like being able to say like, I've like leveled things, or like you can go back and rewatch Twin Peaks and maybe get more nuance out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think it's so great to be able to be introduced to an artist who can help change your life. Honestly, like this is a life changing art experience. And I think that's,
and it shifts the whole, I feel like it has to physically change your brain.
Yeah. I don't know anything about neuroscience, but like, I feel like there has to be ways that this is like genuinely affecting, and art is so like that. Like it can, you know, rewire how you understand things. It can open your mind to things that you would never have experienced or even known about, or like make you suddenly like, oh, I've never thought about this thing from that perspective. And now I understand that person or that group or that argument or whatever better. And even if you're like, I still side with where I was, or if you changed your mind, it's still affecting how you can go about the next.
Right. It's about how you approach things and how you process things. And you may still be very much, you don't have to lose yourself to think about things differently. And I think so, hip hip hooray, a big loss, but an impressive catalog. So if you've not
watched, and like honestly, I haven't seen stuff, but it's not because I'm like categorically against it. I just somehow missed that boat, but I'm really excited to experience it.
I'm going to make Christy watch it when I come down to.
Yeah, we're going to have a David Lynch party. It's going to be great.
Stuart's just going to be like, when is MCR happening again?
When do we need to leave for the concert?
Like, I'm pretty sure that I will say, give yourself a bit of time for these films. They're not short.
They're not. That's okay. I like a good long film.
So if we shift a little bit then, so R.I.P. love him forever.
R.I.P. love him. But you know what? It's not even a shift, because I feel like this is what I want to say about the halftime show as well. Is I've talked with a few people about the halftime show from the Super Bowl, Kendrick Lamar. And one of the things that I have most appreciated about it is that it inspired me to do the same thing that you were talking about. Like, I wanted to learn more about the imagery, and I learned more about all the different kind of nuances. And I've read multiple articles, and not on the same level that any other Super Bowl halftime show has ever really done. I think because there was a lot that I didn't know, because Black culture is not the culture I come from. And specifically LA, you know, and he had a lot of reference in there. And
I didn't even know that was Serena Williams.
I will say, I know, I saw her and I was sitting here and I was texting with some of my friends and I like all caps texted, "Is that Serena Williams?"
Good for you, because I think I was just trying to take it all in, and like at the end, it was kind of like a David Lynch film.
It was.
I need to unpack all of this.
It was, and like there was so much to unpack. I think somebody I saw said, when you ask, and I had forgotten about this, but he's won a Pulitzer Prize. Uh-huh. Like, this is a Pulitzer Prize winning artist that you've asked to do a Super Bowl halftime show. It's not going to be the typical, like, entertaining, but not artistic, I would say. Kind of like lots of stuff going on, helicopters or people swinging from the rafters or whatever. You know, like Left Shark from Katy Perry's is iconic. But like, would I say that that made me think deeper? No. You know, like, did I love that halftime show? Yes. But like, not for real reason. You know, like nothing deep happened in that.
Whereas, right. Like, and I love the Usher one just because of all the Atlanta references.
Yeah. Like,
But it doesn't mean that it's like the best one by any means.
And like what he did was so different. That like I understand, like it wasn't the kind of flashy halftime show that we're used to, but I learned about exactly what Samuel L. Jackson's character, Uncle Sam character, was referencing, which is like very like multi kind of dimensional. It was partly his character from Django Unchained, and then also referencing characters that were in older kind of black plays from segregation and from Civil War and like slavery and stuff. That there would always be a specific kind of, and they had a name for it and I can't remember what it is at the moment, but like there was all this kind of black history that I learned after I watched it and went back in, and I was like, oh, see, I didn't know those things and now I do. And this is exactly what we're talking about, though, is that like it can give you more connection and information and like ideas.
I feel like the people who didn't like it initially either were gonna not like it to start with because of whatever, but then because of racism.
Because of racism,
not whatever racism.
Very specifically racist.
Yeah, very specifically racist. Or I think, they wanted it to be something they didn't have to go and think about. Like, because I think you're right. It is a connection. There is we just want this sort of consumable. And he tells you, and he plays with that throughout, which I did notice on first watch, is he plays with the fact that he's like, they all want to hear me play this song, the Grammy song. And they're like, and then Samuel L. Jackson comes out and is like, oh, Kendrick, you're just too ghetto. You're just too whatever. And like, they're not. Thank you, Stuart.
Stuart bringing more alcohol.
He brought me another seltzer. He's at actual work, and I just texted something for you.
You can't take a break from your real job and bring me another seltzer.
Yeah. I'll take a screenshot and put it up. I just said, it says, bring me seltzer. And then it said, please. And then when he didn't respond after like 5 minutes, I put an exclamation mark.
Amazing.
So that's why he doesn't need a cap. But yeah, so whenever he was making those comments about, oh, they're going to think they can't, you know, all this stuff, I'm like, and then people came out on whatever socials and said, oh, I couldn't understand him. Oh, it was too urban. I hate the word urban. I feel like,
oh God, it's like DEI. Like, just say black. Just say you don't like black people. Just
urban.
Say it.
It's just like, such a, like, what do you it's mean?
Such a, it's such a crappy thing. No, I also saw, this is the other thing, is that I learned about, I don't know if you had to read Uncle Tom's Cabin. Which I read that when I was in high school and I loved it. But as we know, a kind of stereotype of Uncle Tom was that this is a black person who's trying to appeal to white people, blah, blah, blah. Yep. But apparently there was a real Uncle Tom. And so when I was watching in my kind of research of the show, and they were talking again about Samuel L. Jackson's character, they said, here's how his character kind of plays with both Uncle Toms, of like the one from the book and the real Uncle Tom. And then I learned all about this real Uncle Tom, who ended up founding a like free black city up in Canada, because he escaped and like brought a bunch of people, like bought land, brought a bunch of people up, and like created this space in Canada for black, for freed black people or escaped black people. And like all this, it was just like, oh, look, I have this new wealth of information from the Super Bowl halftime show.
How- I mean, there, and that's the thing, is that you watch it and I'm like, didn't know it was Serena Williams, knew there was social commentary happening, definitely noticed the revolution will not be televised.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Loved that. Which,
did you hear Fox News? This was on Reddit, and I would investigate it further, but that they changed the subtitles to you pick the right guy but the wrong time, instead of the wrong guy at the right time.
What? I mean, not that we're surprised at all, but...
No, that's on Reddit, and I'm not claiming that that's true, but they did have a screenshot of it, and someone screened it. That's what it looked like to me, but...
I mean, there was a significant amount of obvious kind of political commentary. Squid Game being referenced, I thought, was really kind of a fascinating, like...
Yeah,
hey, and this is the time we're in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you just needed Samuel L. Jackson to be Uncle Sam for it to be known that something was there, was some underlying message.
You know what? I also learned about Samuel L. Jackson. Do you know that Samuel L. Jackson, in college, he was at Morehouse College, and he and a bunch of other students, because at the time, even though it's an HBCU, most of its leadership were white men, and they ended up kind of, and I'm not going to say this correctly, but they kind of trapped some of the leadership and the directors. And one of the people that they had trapped in a room was Martin Luther King Sr.
Oh no.
MLK Jr.'s dad.
Yeah.
And they like basically were fighting for certain rights at the college. So Jackson's got this like long history of protest and like fighting for rights and stuff.
What a badass.
I know. I was like, look at, I mean, truly all of these things that I learned. And
from a halftime show. What was
from
it
a
like
halftime show. And we get the most iconic screenshot or meme of all, when he said, "Say Drake," and then smiled directly at the camera. And I think that was just.
I saw a comedian talking about the like Drake. I needed it explained.
Was it the Joshua?
Yes.
Yes, it's the 27-minute explanation for white people.
Yes,
it's fantastic. Yes,
we'll post it. Yes,
readers, listeners, if you're not up to date on the Drake,
he does it so well and so funny.
It's the best. Recap I have ever seen of anything.
Okay, I'm really. So of course you've seen it, because I liked it. Of course you have.
Yeah, he's one of my faves.
Oh my god, it's so good, and it's really geared towards white people, even though he's not white.
Well, because so, he's like, hey, I'm gonna help you all out.
He does. He makes.
And I appreciate that. I do. I
every
appreciate.
Time there's a rapper, he goes. He's like, okay, y'all. This one guy. He's like, sir, that's a rapper. Just so you know. Which honestly was helpful. I'm not gonna lie.
I mean, honestly, I like Kendrick Lamar a lot, and I will say the other thing that I enjoyed that I think was not necessarily like universal was that it was mostly his new album. Mm. I did want there to be a couple more old hits, but I understand the point of the songs that he did.
Yeah, I think he was trying to.
There was a bigger picture than just like playing hits, you know. So I get it, but
and it was he was a you and I both have talked about our love of Kendrick, so it's not like new news, but like it was a weird choice in a way.
It was a surprising choice, I think.
Yeah, I don't mean weird as in strange. I mean weird as in strange, not weird as in bad. Like I'm surprised that a bunch of presumably white old men got together in a room and were like, you know what?
You know who we should have for our
halftime show? We should have for the halftime show
is Kendrick Lamar. And let's make him be the solo artist too, because it's the first time it's been a solo rap artist on the halftime show. And so like it's so
he was on with the other like the West Coast guys. He did like
he was on with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is arguably, I think, my favorite halftime show ever. But that's for entirely.
That to me is my favorite, I would say.
I mean, I don't know how to like. For millennials, I don't know how you top that.
Right.
But.
Well, you said Rihanna, and I said, I love Rihanna. Like, I could.
Like Rihanna, though.
I could watch Be Better Have. Bitch Better Have My. Like, she I is could watch so her. Badass in that video. But she didn't move.
Well, she was very pregnant. I feel like, because I was talking with somebody about that halftime show as well. And again, I think that it was a preference thing. Like, I don't really like the ones where there's just too much going on. It's overwhelming to me. Lady Gaga jumping from the thing. Like, I just was like, what is happening? Like, I think that's just a bit much for me.
I think there's an in-between.
I think that Rihanna's the two things I like the most. One was that it was like we got a little mini Rihanna concert that we're never gonna get again, right? Because we all know that she's done with music.
She's a bazillion years. She doesn't.
But also the sign language interpreter for Rihanna was so amazing. And
I don't think I saw that part.
You have
she probably to moved, it. She probably moved more than Rihanna moved.
She was fantastic. The ASL person for Kendrick was also good, but I haven't seen as much. But like I've seen basically the entirety of the halftime show by the sign language woman, and it's worth watching. Like even if you don't know ASL, which I only know like minimal things, but it's super fun.
Well, you were a big fan and you did the deep dive.
I did the deep dive, and I think it's worth doing the deep dive because you come away with like they talked about like the costumes, like people have talked about all of the different groups that he had. Again, I learned more about Serena Williams, and like, do you know that she crip walked at Wimbledon and almost got thrown out?
No. Oh, no, I was shaking yes to crip walk, and I had to find out what crip walk was, and then they were like, did you know she did that? And I was like, first of all, I didn't know it was her. Second of all, I didn't know what that was.
Yep. She crip walked at Wimbledon a long time ago and almost got thrown out, and so it was like another...
I'm surprised anyone in London, England knew what a crip walk.
Oh, I know, right? The fact that anyone was able to recognize it is shocking to me.
I lived in Atlanta and certainly had no, but I guess we wouldn't because we wouldn't do that, right? Is it a West Coast thing?
It's a West Coast thing, yeah. I mean, I don't know how far the Bloods and the Crips go in the country, but I don't think that Atlanta
I did appreciate that Josh comedian being like, I hope we don't end up like the 90s again. Like,
same. I also don't
mention, you know, Bloods and Crips. I was like, you know, I hope we don't, and I agreed with him on that. Like, he was being genuine. I hope it doesn't get that far.
Yes, I do too. I went to this is a good throwback as well. I went to a Coolio concert.
Oh, yes, you did.
yeah, you did. It was actually an I Love the 90s concert, and it was about 7 years ago. And Coolio was there, as well as All for One. Do you remember All for One?
Yep, I do. I can't tell you a single song, but I remember the four being there.
Yep, Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray.
Oh God.
And anyway, but Coolio got up and he was doing his set, and he went on a very long, very confusing, kind of tangent about the East Coast West Coast Biggie versus Tupac thing, and like was like, this is the worst, and like, we need to stop these kinds of wars, and like,
oh, good for him.
but was like really talking as if the Biggie Tupac thing was still very much happening, which for the majority white audience that was at this, we were all like, isn't that over? It's very confusing.
Well, I mean, they're not alive. So.
I mean, those two are not, no.
The whole, I get what you're saying, like the whole, yeah.
Like, but like the whole thing. And we were like, is that
zeitgeist, though, at the time? I mean, it was a thing.
It was a big thing. So it was slightly confusing for us, but like, it was a reminder that this was not like, I mean, I think because it's kind of removed from you and I, we were not old enough to really understand it. And so I think it was a good reminder for me, like, that this was a really terrible thing that happened. So no, I don't want that to happen again. I don't want us to get
because of time. I'm going to ask you one question. Penny has emerged.
Penny is out of the blanket.
She's more sedated, though, now.
She is. She had a good snooze.
Your favorite performance, since we're not going to be able to go deep dive, favorite performance at the Grammys, and why?
Favorite performance at the Grammys.
Or that's favorite, hard. I'll give you favorite win as well. Someone who won, and why.
Okay. I would say, I'm going to say a favorite performance and a favorite win.
That wasn't the rule. You're bad at this.
I am the youngest child and I get to adjust
I saw that in the last podcast we did with Ryan and I was like, no, Chris, you have to pick one. You only have 45 hours. You have to pick one.
Okay, so my favorite win was Dochi because she was so excited and it was really cute. Like, it was a sweet kind of win. I was happy for Beyonce, but Beyonce is the most reserved human being in the world. So, like, watching it is not that exciting. But
I did like her reaction that's now become a meme when she won.
Oh, yeah, when she won country, that was pretty
cool. Yeah, she was like, whoa. And it was like, oh. Someone put it's all of us in 2025 because she's just like,
like,
oh gosh, what's happening? What's happening? And I'm like,
my favorite performance was actually I'm trying to remember. You know how it was like a bunch of LA themed songs?
Mm-hmm.
Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars sang something and I can't remember what it was that they sang.
All the leaves are all the
yes, that's it. Look, if you want to know like the way to my heart, it's anything 70s related, 60s, 70s related. And they had like the whole aesthetic going on and then they sang that song and I was just like, this is fantastic. So that was my favorite performance. What about you?
Well, I'm going to do 5 performances and 2 winning. My favorite, I've already talked about this with you, but my favorite performance was Chapel Run by far.
Yeah, that was good.
I think I had heard that song because I go to bars, but I like had not really heard her talk about it.
I like
how
you said you go to bars. Like, I don't go to bars though.
That is an only child interpretation of the words I said. Or sorry, youngest child, not only child. No, I'm saying I go to bar. Where else am I going to hear these songs?
No, I mean, I get it. You're just like, I go to bars.
I go to bars. I leave Christy at home. I'm 21, guys. Watch out. I'd heard her song in the bars. But to hear her background, and there was another interview that I saw with her mom, who just sounds like my mom. And there was some sort of, I swear to God, when she sings that line at the end where she's like, you know, you may have thought I left you, but I can still hear your, every Saturday, I can hear your Southern drawl 1,000 miles away.
Oh, yeah.
If I'd been in Scotland, Christy, I would have.
Oh, I can picture
broken.
It now.
It would have broken me. Like, I would have broke down. And anytime anyone asks why I came back home, from Scotland. I'm going to just reference that line. And you can deal with it as you will.
Yep.
But I just thought it was also just really cool because, like, the song is great and pop, mm-hmm. like, very poppy and whatever. But also just, like, this idea of sort of finding yourself and, like, it doesn't even – I don't even care. If she was from Mars, it wouldn't matter. Like, I like the fact that she references, like, the South. But also I think more importantly is this idea of, you know, me and you did this. We left – you left home and you found yourself and, like, you kind of mm-hmm. maybe wasn't in a pink pony club, but it was at, you know, Glasgow University or whatever. And
it sure was at Curlers, you know?
Right. And we changed and we found yeah. different ways of, and I just, but the fact that you always still feel that tie yeah. to home and like that you never forget that, it's just that, so that to me just hit the right spot. But I'm telling you, if I'd heard it, like I said, when I was in Scotland, no, I would be in a corner still.
Yeah.
Somewhere. My favorite win, I will say I did like, I like country music. Christy is not a huge fan of contemporary country music, I should say.
Correct. Yes. Contemporary yeah. country music now.
You like your 90s stuff.
I like the 90s and the old school.
I have a deep love of Kacey Musgraves. So, okay. And she put out a really good album. Okay. Now, is it Beyonce level? Like, again, I don't know how they choose this stuff. Like, clearly not in the yeah. whole, like, cultural thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just want to put that flag in the stand. She has a song called The Architect, which we'll also put up, which is a great theological song. It's really interesting.
Okay.
Because she borders on, like, kind of being an atheist and being Christian, but also smoking weed with Willie Nelson, and she's just sort of an interesting character.
That's the dream.
Point being, yeah, I mean, she's kind of a modern country. But anyway,
when I figure out how to smoke weed with Willie Nelson, I mean,
I mean, no, yes. Honestly, I don't even like smoking, but I would do it because you have to at that stage. I mean,
yeah,
guys, we're not encouraging you to do illegal activities, but we would encourage that. So
legal in Colorado, just join us there.
Or seltzers, apparently in North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
until they figure out what's happening. They've just forgotten all the rest of the stuff we're doing. They're too busy with, you know, big things. So, but when Beyonce won Country Album of the Year,
mm-hmm.
people have thoughts about that. I'm here to listen to them. I have my own opinions. We can go into that later. But I will say, I love the interaction between her and Taylor Swift. It felt so full circle to me.
It did, yeah.
Because, like, she gave her that award, and, like, I honestly felt like Taylor Swift was a little hesitant, like, she didn't really know what to do in the midst of that. Not because she didn't think she deserved it, but I think because of the whole background, like, she's been PR'd to death about it.
Yeah. I think that Taylor, and I want to give props to Taylor for this, it did feel like she was trying to let Beyonce have the whole spotlight,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and so she was, like, backing off, and Beyonce, like, was like, no.
She was like, bring her back in.
Bring you back in, you know? And I really love that the two of them are friends. I think there's 100%. A lot of evidence that they're friends. But I think it's like a really, it's a lovely thing to see.
It was a lovely thing. And I agree with everything yeah. you just said. I think yeah. Taylor was trying to be like, here's your award. I don't want to be an mm-hmm. asshole that shall not be named, like the way that yep. it was to be here. And here's your time. And Beyonce, to all her credit, was like, no, girl, come in here. We are not the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You and I are not the issue here.
The
like,
two of them are not the issue.
We're both queens. Like, stop. Yeah. Like, we are doing our thing. Like, and I, you know, you saw it too when Beyonce won Album of the Year. Like, Taylor was mm-hmm. like, yay. And also, it's like, why are you panning to Billie Eilish? Why are you panning to Taylor Swift? Like, you didn't pan to Kendrick Lamar with your camera when he lost or whoever lost. It's like,
right.
Why are you wanting these women to be
why
mad
are you
at
trying
each other?
To pit women against each other?
Why are you trying
when
to
we're pit not?
And I thought that was a great moment for them. Is like they were up there, and also always appreciate Beyonce. By the way, when she won after Taylor had won her like first Grammy or first no,
she
it was a moment.
Yeah.
She brought it back out.
Yep.
And I think from that moment that solidified something, and it was like, and I think she was trying to do the same grace to Beyonce in that moment. Mm-hmm. And Beyonce was like, nah, we're not the issue. This is not.
I agree. I think one of the things that I appreciated so much about both of Beyonce's wins, like I said, she's a pretty reserved person, so she's not going to emote on stage, like, which is fine. Do your, you know, everybody has their own way of doing that. But I really did like watching how much she obviously also, like, she brought Taylor back in for the hug. When they did pan to the other people, you saw how happy they were for her.
Oh my gosh. Like, thrilled.
You kind of got a good sense of, like, a lot of the drama that we put on these women does not exist for them.
Mm-hmm.
It is drama that we put there unnecessarily. And I agree. That, and was like on, I had this picture
that was like on like some website, and it was like, Miley Cyrus ignores Taylor Swift. Miley Cyrus was having a conversation with people at her table, and Taylor Swift was like over there. It'd be like taking a picture of you and I being like, they're fighting, because we were just not in the same circle of conversation. Like, maybe they are fighting, but they weren't like actively fighting in that.
They weren't actively fighting. And also, yeah, like, honestly, there is no reason to believe that they're fighting. Like,
it's just, I think, but, and I will say, you know, we spent half of this talking about that fight between Kendrick and Drake. It's like, you know, maybe this is part of the fuel of the interest, and I don't know.
Absolutely. But like, quick point of Kendrick's feud with Drake seems to be like predicated on Drake also having some very serious problems. So.
No, when he started saying stuff, I was like, my Google was like, is this real?
Oh. Like,
what have you been doing? I know,
like, there's a reason we're all screaming A minor, and it is not the key. So, like,
right, and I just was like, you know, because I know, like, Drake, one song of Drake, so
Kendrick and Drake can have that fight. I think that's a fight we can get on board with.
Yeah, I like that the girls are like, nah, we're good.
The girls being because the fight between the girls seems to just be that only one girl gets to be good, right? And this is something that you and I know well, and we'll talk about someday. Yeah. But like, this, that women are inherently catty, or that we're inherently going to fight each other, is not real and doesn't need to be perpetuated. But that doesn't mean that beefs can't exist, and beefs can exist and be for good reason.
Oh, this Reddit comment, he's like, so it's basically the women up for best album of the year.
And yes,
like Kendrick. Basically. And I was like, I mean, yeah, and I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I love all of this. Again, I'm excited to see David Lynch stuff with you. Mm-hmm. And to,
we're gonna have a great summer. I'm gonna see you.
Yep.
At some point. And but also I wanna come in the summer, and hopefully you can come. We have a new flight that comes from Charlotte to Tampa.
And guys, one of these days, we're going to do some kind of, when we get our shit together, we're going to do some kind of like live podcast.
Oh, we talked about this, and we would love to hear your interest. Can I go ahead and talk about what we talked about?
Yeah.
That we were talking about doing a book, a band book Patreon thing, because we don't do Patreon, but having a book club for band book. And because Chrissy and I both are, she's a real lit major, and I'm like a fake lit major. We're all David Lynch in our hearts. But I think we want to know if you're interested in that. Honestly, you and I could probably just have a book club by ourselves too. Like, if no one else showed up, we would still
We could do it ourselves, but we are inviting you all in to the fold. Let us know via comments or messages or what have you, if you'd be interested in the band book club. And we'll start setting that up. And then, we've got other fun stuff on the horizon as well. But Leah and I are excited to be in the same city again as much as possible this summer.
That's the goal. Our brat girl,
we're not traveling to Europe this summer. So.
Oh my God. I felt such a sense of relief Like, I was looking at the conferences I, quote, had to go to, and I was like, you know what, though? I don't have to go to Europe. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Like, I love my Europe. I love my Europe people. It was a great trip. I'm forever grateful I got to do it, but, like.
It made me want to never leave my house again, and woo. I hate being in my house, so.
We were real tired after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, my sinuses are exploding, so I'm going to say.
Here's to art. Here's to art and our summers.
And our summer.
And I have a Dr. Whaley mug.
Christy is in no way aggravated at me telling her how many Georgia Bulldogs are on the Philadelphia Eagles team.
Oh, here's to the Philadelphia Eagles beating the Super Bowl champions, because I laughed and I cheered and I laughed so much. It was a great game.
Yeah.
It was a great game. All right. See y'all next week.
Hey, you're welcome, NFL. Goodbye. Bye.